ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, September 7th, 2018. Joining us on the line today, John Arnold of Goal. Good morning, John.
Hey, morning. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good, John. We had you on because we as Canadians, we get very excited when people who aren't Canadian talk about us. And you wrote an article talking about the, you didn't call them a golden generation, thankfully. You didn't call them the maple syrup generation, which would have been funny, but still. But you talked about how the young talent in the Canadian national team setup is enough to sort of at least make you raise your eyes and have a look. So tell me what motivated you to write that piece.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I think Canadians should get excited about not necessarily me, but just people outside of Canada talking about this generation of Canadian players, because I think it's worth getting excited about, or more so the players themselves and any attention we might give to them. I mean, basically, honestly, my editor, who is actually UK-based but follows Belgian and Dutch football pretty closely, saw Jonathan David, and he was like, hey, what's up with this kid? I know he's really good, and I know this Davies guy is supposed to be really good, so what's up with this? Is Canada going to be good? And I said, you know, you look down the roster, you look at the squad, and especially for me, I think the starting point could be, and I mentioned this in the piece, could be that Toulon tournament, which even though Canada didn't advance into the semifinals and they didn't lose a game, they looked really impressive in most of their performances, and you look at the core of that squad, yeah, there's Davies and David, but there's also guys like Chris Tuarek, who didn't even make this Canadian Nations League call up. There's other players who really seem like they're going to be able to be part of this sort of next generation of Canadian soccer. Add that to the fact that while Nations League won't provide the stiffest of competition, at least initially, I think it will help Canada to have regular competitive games qualifying for the Gold Cup for the first time. So, and then you look at the CPL starting. So all those things, I think, are coming together to make an exciting mix for Canadian soccer. And, you know, look, it isn't something that we talk about a lot outside of Canada and sort of CONCACAF nerd Twitter. So I thought it was worth taking a little bit of a dive and speaking with, I was lucky enough to speak with John Herdman and a few of the players sort of involved. So, yeah, hopefully the piece turned out well, and that was sort of the genesis, was actually Jonathan David breaking out in Belgium and a British guy, a British-based guy who was interested in Dutch and Belgian football being like, wait a second, what's happening in Canada, and efforting to tell that.
I'm going to get CONCACAF nerd Twitter tattooed on me somewhere. At any rate, I want to talk about Alphonso Davies, obviously, because he is, I think, the key to most of what the hopes lie in Canada in terms of having the potential of a superstar, the potential of a game changer, a game breaker, which is something this country really has never had before. How good do you think Alphonso Davies can be, and what is his profile beyond the borders of Canada right now?
I think any time a player signs with a club like Bayern, you know, we're in this media environment where people sort of follow players more than clubs, but when they do follow clubs, they're following the biggest and best. And so when someone signs for Real Madrid, Manchester United, you know, I don't need to list the clubs, your audience knows, the giant, giant clubs, Bayern among them, everyone's like, whoa, what's happening here? Who is this guy? Of course, if you've been following North American soccer, even outside Canada, you know, I think Davies is a pretty known quantity in a place like Mexico where, you know, they've seen him suit up in the Gold Cup. They've seen sort of a lot of the highlight videos and what he can do just from the moves that he can make. You know, I think his ball control and dribbling really, it already was pretty good. I think this year it seems like he's taken that to another level. He's a player who a lot of times we see players have success at this level or in this region, period, and it's just because, well, they're faster than everyone else, and they can knock the ball really far past the defender, run faster than everyone else, and set up a play. He isn't quite doing that as much now. He's more relying on different moves, and I think that's what's captured the eyes of Bayern and everyone else. To me, he's a guy whose ceiling, who knows, you know, is still really young. He's already getting a lot of experience playing minutes in MLS. He's going to be a key part of the Canadian national team. And then, you know, soon enough, he's going to go to Bayern. not saying he's going to play there right away. And you could say, oh, maybe that'll be bad for his development. But I do think it's a club that's shown it can be trusted with young players. It's a club that really is eager to bring through more young players because they have a generation that's sort of, I was going to say expiring. You know, they're going to be fine on as human beings, but won't be able to play anymore, won't be at their top level anymore. And they need young players to come through, and I think they see Davies as a very real part of that future. So I don't think there's any reason necessarily right now not to buy stock in the kid. You know, I get it. We don't want to overinflate people. We don't want to blow people up and then have them be, you know, not successful. But I think this is a player who's already demonstrated he has the talent to succeed at this level, and if he can continue demonstrating that for the next 3-4 years, not only is he a player that Canada can be proud of, but I think could be a player that you talk about in some of the best in the world.
Another player that was mentioned in the piece, John, is Balu Tabla, Montreal product, born in Ivory Coast, now playing for Barcelona B with a few stints with the main club during the preseason. In the piece, John Herdman talked about how it might be a decision, whatever is best for the player, and then it's a question of commitment. What can you tell us more about Balu Tabla and his future either for for Canada or for Ivory Coast?
Yeah, I talked to a few people around Barcelona as well, reporters, not anybody, you know, staff-wise, but it sounds like he's sort of in a holding pattern where right now his focus needs to be, really, and is, on winning minutes with Barca rather than trying to make an international decision. You know, that's a club where, similar to what Davies will face, he's in competition with not just one world-class player, but, you know, 5, 6, 7 other prospects who could be essentially doing the same thing that he's trying to do. So it sounds like the competition is pretty stiff right there in Barcelona B, and I think that while that's the case, he probably will be a little bit more reluctant to make a decision. But yeah, everything I've heard is that he's still sort of weighing his options. I don't want to say at a standstill, but it sounds like Herdman still calls him now and then. That's the impression he gave speaking to journalists, saying, you know, I'm not going to, you know, just go try and have a 6-course meal with the kid and make him sign on the dotted line after I give him a Canada, you know, bag of swag, he said. But you do get the impression that they're in communication. That said, you know, he's an exciting player. But I do think that when you look at this Canada roster and you look at the kind of dynamics of the Canadian national team in general, you have players, even in this recent call-up, you know, Alessandro Bustia was able to talk to the Juventus goalkeeping prospect. He's only 18. He's, you know, raised in Italy, but has, you know, Canadian roots and is proud of that and wants to represent Canada. You look at a guy, I mentioned Twardek earlier, he played in the Czech Republic youth team and now has chosen to represent Canada. You know, even Davies and David, I believe, could have been eligible to pursue other national teams had that been their desire, but it seems like Canada is sort of getting this group together, and it's almost like if your followers know college football, it's like recruiting. You know, you get the best quarterback in the country to go to your university to play American football. The best wide receivers are going to be looking as well. And I think that you have a little bit of that element where suddenly it's sort of maybe cool to play for Canada. There's other guys who can be fun to play with Canada again. And so I think Herdman may be less concerned with the division of Tabla individually, but also still, you know, wanting him to go. But if he makes another decision, I think Canada soccer, Herdman, and the senior national team would be okay with that. That being said, I think that decision is probably still several months away, if not more.
Now we're getting excited talking about the offensive threat and the flair that Canada might have in the future. A bit of a concern, Dwayne and I have spoken about this a few times during the last few weeks, is the backline, the defense. In your opinion, how far are we from having a decent backline here in Canada?
Well, it's certainly the problem. You look at this team and it's like, oh, wow, you know, there's great wingers, there's great forwards, there's players who can get the guys the ball. And you look at the back and it's like, oh, okay, hold on. Here's our issue, right? I several people I talked to in Canada soccer and some guys who would play with him were really high on Derek Cornelius. And with respect to him, he did have a good tournament in Toulon, but I don't see, even at this, you know, even at the CONCACAF level, you're going to have a better club situation than playing in the Serbian second division to be a real factor. Now, maybe that gets sorted out in the winter or next summer. I'm not sure. So they're really high on him. He's 20. We'll see what he can do. Zachary Brock-Guillard in the Lyon system. same situation. Seems to be, you know, promising player in the Lyon Academy. I know he's getting his first kind of look and taste around the senior setup for this Nations League game. So, you know, maybe there's something in the pipeline there, but that definitely looks to be the deficiency. You know, maybe Canada rolls the ball and tries to win every game 5-1 or 5-3 or whatever. but no, I mean, that definitely is the area that, that you think needs the most improvement when you kind of look at the squad, look at the generation coming up, and even look at the games that they've played at the youth level. That's sort of the area of concern. You know, I think it can get developed, but it's definitely where I'm looking right now as a potential pitfall for this generation being relevant in going into the future.
One of the debates that happened here in Canada when John Herdman quite uniquely took over the program was how someone that had completely developed in coaching in the women's game and didn't have any experience playing at any level of note, how he would adapt to coaching professional men. You had a chance to talk to him, had a chance to talk to some players. What's your take on the John Herdman experiment so far?
I'll be honest, and I didn't want this necessarily to come out in the article, but I was pretty skeptical whenever the move was announced. I mean, first of all, I didn't think Zambrano did that bad of a job. I mean, I know him at some distance here, and some people in Canada weren't that thrilled with him, but from what I saw, I thought he was doing kind of a good job of sort of getting that culture that I think is so important for Canada soccer, and sort of doing what I was mentioning and sort of making it cool to play for Canada, recruiting these guys who are dual nationals. I thought Zambrano had, you know, some good ideas, was maybe on the right path with a little time, could have maybe turned it into something good. That said, it seems like the guys now are really with Herdman 100%. And I think the idea that he has, you know, it's not necessarily revolutionary, but the idea that he has of, okay, I'm going to put the same tactics, style, and sort of culture he wants to implement from the senior national team on down to whatever youth of 15, youth 13, whatever the youngest camp that they call of boys. And I think that's a smart idea. Maybe one that he's taken from the women's game. I'm really not sure. But I think that's very wise. And he did say, you know, it's been a big challenge because this is something that he hasn't really done before. But, you know, I do think that sometimes we can put a little bit too much emphasis on, well, this guy was, I mean, look, I'm covering the story of Diego Maradona arriving to coach a Mexican second division team. Do I think he's going to be successful? No. Do I think he's one of the best players ever, if not the best? Absolutely. You know, that's an extreme example. But I do think the fact that that he's doing something new, while it is worth talking about, maybe shouldn't be automatically a strike against Herdman. You know, I just came off covering Juan Carlos Osorio's first ever international job. Yes, he was coaching professional men before, but he took a lot of the same principles that he learned from club jobs and as assistant in clubs and that sort of thing, and was able to sort of translate those. Some of them didn't work, and he quickly learned which ones didn't work. I think Herdman will be doing the same. I think he's going to realize, whoa, this thing I used to do with the women's team, this does not work with the men's team. And I think you can adapt quickly, and it seems like the Canadian Federation is going to back him. So he maybe doesn't have a lot of wiggle room with these Nations League games. I think you do have to win these games, and probably by a big margin. But I don't necessarily see Canada having an issue with that. Then, once the Gold Cup comes, and as they turn their sights to 2022, that's when I think you'll have a little bit of a, I don't know if growing pains is the right word, but maybe realization that some of the methods that he wants to put into place are maybe not best suited for this side of the game. But I do think that talking to the players and talking to him, it seems like everyone's for now singing from the same hymn sheet, really, really, you know, bought into this idea, the ideas that Herdman is bringing and trying to kind of make an identity, which can be really important on the international level. So I was really skeptical at first, but I think that the project looks like so far the early returns are really promising.
Let's talk about the Nations League in general. And obviously, the qualifying for it, I guess, is how you'd the classification part of it. I guess that's maybe the right way to put it. Starts on Sunday with Canada playing the U.S. Virgin Islands. As you say, that should not be a tough one. This is a competition that is not just about Canada, not just about the United States, Mexico, and the bigger nations. I hesitate to put Canada in the list of bigger nations, but compared to some of the smaller Caribbean places, it certainly is. So just talk about your feelings on the Nation League, whether this is the right way forward for CONCACAF, and what kind of benefit you think it might bring to the region.
I almost think CONCACAF had to do it, and I think they're being a bit progressive by starting the Nations League and starting it now. UEFA does the same, and I think when you sort of eliminate the potential friendly partners in Europe, now you have Africa, Asia, and 10 CONMEBOL nations that you can have friendlies against. So if you need competitive friendlies, it's going to be very difficult. Yeah, sure, everyone wants to play Argentina and Brazil every window, but if Argentina and Brazil already played Mexico and the U.S. and Canada last window, well, obviously that wouldn't happen. You understand what I'm saying. They're not going to play them in the next. So I think it can be, could have been very difficult to find friendlies. I think it'll still be sort of a factor as teams figure out exactly, you know, what the balance is between competitive matches and friendlies now in this sort of new era. I think it could be really, really big for some of these teams that in Buda, Turks and Caicos Islands, even in Montserrat, which is like one of the worst countries in the FIFA rankings. Their island, you know, they had a volcano that made a lot of the population move. They haven't played a competitive match since 2015. They're in the Nations League, and that can be big because, you know, with consistent football, with an identity, with a project, with the same manager for every game and not calling up a different guy every 4 years to play, you can start to actually kind of develop the game. And it's going to take money and time and all that stuff. But I think this is a good step for those nations. Now, does it come at the expense of the U.S., Mexico, even a team like Canada? Maybe. You know, I was a little surprised because I asked John Herdman, well, okay, tell me about this Nations League. And for me, I do see it as a big positive for Canada because I think one thing that was kind of holding the national team back was not only were you not getting the experience of playing games to qualify for the Gold Cup, but you also were just kind of tanking in the FIFA rankings because you didn't have big games. You didn't have big wins. You didn't have teams who were playing recently that you're playing. Now they do. But Herdman wasn't quite as excited, I guess, about the Nations League. I think he's ready for the games and ready for the chance and happy to see his team play competitive games. But he said, you know, we kind of aspire to play more competitive teams. And when we go play at the Gold Cup, it's going to be a lot different playing a team like the U.S. or even a Trinidad and Tobago than it will be playing a team like U.S. Virgin Islands. So that's a fair point, but I still think that this will be something good for Canada, and especially when you can qualify for the top league, which I think they should do. If you can get in that top six and be in League A, then not only will you have the Gold Cup, we also have these future Nations League games against some of CONCACAF's best teams. So I get it, and look, it's one thing where I think it'll probably develop and grow in CONCACAF and in UEFA as we sort of figure out, well, that wasn't good, no one watched that, or, oh, this was really cool, this could be a thing that we need to do more often. We'll go and learn, I think, as sort of a soccer culture, and the sportocrats that run everything will figure it out, and I think ultimately we'll look back at the Nations League as a huge shift, but also as something that was good for maybe everyone, but certainly I think the smaller teams in the region and eventually a team that's looking to punch up like Canada.
Feels a bit like the Davis Cup in tennis. I don't know right now if it's going to be that aspect, but that's a bit how I explain to people. Like, Kevin, what's the Nations League Cup? I'm like, first of all, very good question, but I think it's a bit like the Davis Cup. You're in Houston right now to cover Eltree, and of course it was famously announced a few weeks ago Juan Carlos Osorio left Mexico. He decided to leave on his own before he gets sacked, and now he just took over Paraguay. What is the legacy of JCO with Eltree?
I think it's a complicated legacy, and I think it's one that like many sort of 10 years in history, especially now where, you know, it's just very easy to kind of tear people down in positions of power, not that some don't deserve to be. I think it'll be one where we look back and Osorio will be more appreciated for what he did with Mexico than he is at this current moment. The Federation wanted to sign a contract extension with Osorio. They wanted him to lead the next cycle, and I think he was so fed up with just the criticism and the culture and everything that he left. I don't think it necessarily played out like he wanted to, but I know Paraguay was sort of aggressively pursuing him from minute one, the first time that they knew it could be a possibility, and that has now paid off. I think his tenure with Mexico, you know, we're going to see some of the fruits still later, you know, some of the chances that he's given to young players. And people criticized him for putting players in different positions, you know, being a tinkerer and asking players to play strange roles. But you look at the players that he did that with. Jesus Gallardo moved from Pumas to Monterrey. He had European interest at the World Cup after playing fullback, which was his converted position. Carlos Salcedo, unfortunately, he's injured right now, but a guy who I think is going to be Mexico's best defender for probably the next 5-7 years. He gave an interview to El País, the Spanish newspaper, this week, saying Osorio told me I need to figure out how to play right back, and it was the best decision for me. Like, I went to Europe and played at a club, and at Fiorentina, they were like, hey, can you play right back? And I was like, of course. I learned that at the national team. And so he's giving credit to Osorio. Chicharito called Osorio the best manager he's ever worked with in Mexico by far. He won over the players. He didn't win over the press. He didn't win over the fans. But I think when they look back, and when you look at the long term, back at that era that Osorio had Mexico at, okay, you go without any sort of major international tournament wins, but I think you're going to see the changes that he started to implement, the way that he made the players think. I think that could resonate for a long time for Mexico in a really positive way. So it's going to be fascinating to watch him with Paraguay. It's a totally different process and only a second national team job. I think a lot of people forgot he was learning on the fly with Mexico. But I'm fascinated to watch what happens there. I think it's a big challenge. It's a team that has some pieces, but has never quite put it together. At least not recently. So it's going to be really interesting to watch, and I think Osorio's legacy for Mexico will be more and more appreciated as the months and years go by.
All right, we'll wrap up with this. The United States year of, long, angry walk in the woods year is almost over, but they still haven't named a full-time manager. I'm wondering how important you feel it is for them to get past this manager search, which apparently, according to Ives, hasn't even started yet, really. How important it is for them to move forward, or is it more important that they take their time and get the right person in that role moving forward?
Yeah, well, I speak both as a journalist and as an American who is not covering the team right now and so can sort of have a little bit of my stars and stripes showing through. So to me, it's a bit frustrating that there's no coach. I was all in on the, let's wait and see. Let's not make a rash decision. Let's not just bring on anybody who sort of walks through the door that has a decent resume. Let's take our time. I was all aboard that sort of train of thought, thinking that after the World Cup, we'd have candidates emerge who would be appropriate, would be good for the U.S. national team, and I think that happened. There are guys who are free agents after the World Cup, Osorio among them. I know not everybody dug his style, and that's fine, but there were other managers as well who sort of came free or could have come free after the World Cup, and we didn't even call him, apparently, and that's not good to me. I think, how do you go about doing even what Canada's doing and saying, this is our culture, this is how we want to play, this is our identity, this is what we want the 15-year-old kids to learn, this is what we want the 17-year-old kids to learn. How do you go about doing that when there's not a leader and not someone who's bringing that along right now? So I'd like there to be someone coaching the team. At this point, you say, okay, well, maybe it comes in December now and it starts in January. All right. And I think for Mexico, like, that's a fine timetable. That's what they're working with. They got Tuca Ferretti as the interim. They didn't know they weren't going to have a manager until July. So I think it's a really different situation when you look at the U.S., who now has a year of knowing, well, we're not going to be at the World Cup. We're going to need to build for the future. We don't want to make any crazy decisions, but we do need someone to lead this team. I think it's a pretty different situation than the one Mexico's in. And I think American fans are totally right to be frustrated, especially at the fact that this coach search isn't really off the ground yet, and you kind of need it to be, pretty far along at this point. So I think it can be very important. I'm glad the U.S. didn't go out and make a rash decision. I think Mexico's doing the right thing by not doing the same. I think Costa Rica's doing the right thing by going with an interim for these windows and probably October, November as well. But the U.S. is in a different situation, and I think they probably should get it sorted out as soon as possible. So I'm eagerly awaiting news of a coach. And I think from there, the U.S. can then go about the next steps of building identity, figuring out what they want to do and who they want to be.
The new GM of the U.S. men's national team, Ernie Stewart, mentioned a few days ago that it'll probably be December. So I guess you're going to have a brand new Christmas gift under the tree, and it will be a brand new coach. John Arnold, thank you very much for your time today. You can follow John Arnold, John, on the different social media. Enjoy your game tonight, John, and thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back today. You can find John's article if you're from Canada. You can't go to goal.com, you will be redirected to the sporting news. So go to John's Twitter feed at Arnold, John, and you will find a Canadian link for the article, Dwayne.
Yeah, I retweeted that as well. And not only will you find a be redirected to the sporting news link, but if you're used to clicking goal links, you'll and have been doing it for 2 years now and still having them redirect you to the sporting news homepage without giving you any access to the actual article you clicked on, you'll probably throw your phone into the lake. So yeah, that's don't do that. And that's just my little editorial on the fact that they haven't figured that out yet. But anyway, that's a different story for another day.
Exactly. Games of the Nations League. There's a few games today, Dwayne. Anguilla, French Guiana, Antigua and Barbuda versus St. Lucia. You know, I'm getting married next year and we're thinking of going to either Antigua, Barbuda, or St. Lucia. So I guess the winner of that game is getting myself, as in my honeymoon week. Belize, Bahamas, and then tomorrow, Saint Vincent de Grenadines versus Nicaragua, Cuba, Turks and Caicos, Guyana versus Barbados, Montserrat, the team that John was talking about, one of the smallest teams in the entire FIFA world, versus El Salvador, Bonaire? What is that? I don't know. I've never heard of it before. That's what the Nations League is all about, versus the Dominican Republic. On Sunday, U.S. Virgin Islands, Canada, Aruba, Bermuda, Jamaica, Cayman Islands, St. Kitts and Nevis, Puerto Rico, Haiti, St. Martin's, Curaçao, Grenada, we're almost over. St. Martin, Guadeloupe, and Martinique and the British Virgin Islands. Those are the Nation League's games in the match day one of the classification process.
As a St. Martin's football expert, Kevin. No, I'm kidding. Look, yeah, these games
they have Dutch players. I know that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, we see Guadeloupe. We see some of these teams, you know, at the Gold Cup, obviously, and that's it's nice to I like the Nations League. I really do. And I think it is going to be. John Herdman is maybe frustrated that they have to play this classification stage right now. So instead of, because he's got a Gold Cup to prepare for next summer. I don't think a lot of people really conceptualize that we're less than a year away from a Gold Cup. And for John Herdman, even because it's kind of. The Gold Cup's kind of what it is, right? And, you know, we're excited when it's here, but we don't think about it a lot between it. But to the people in the program, they're probably looking at that as a great measuring point. And John Herdman likely looks at these, you know, 4 months where he's stuck playing, and that's probably how they think about it, stuck playing the likes of the U.S. Virgin Islands as time that he could be better, you know, prepared playing better teams. But I think you've got to look long-term on this and realize that as long as you win these games, and there's absolutely no excuse for them not to. I know that Canadian soccer fans are, you know, inclined to be negative and think, oh, they'll find a way to screw this up and end up in the second tier. I don't think so.
What?
I mean, they've never really...
We never did that before. No, of course. We never trouble in classification or qualification matches. What are you talking about?
Not against teams this okay, size. They fine. Really haven't. I mean, even in World Cup qualifying, when they played these in the past, I remember distinctly... the Grenadines and what's the first part of the Grenadines? I can't even remember right now. Anyway,
Saint Vincent
and the Grenadines. The other ones, playing the,
Saint Kitts and Nevis. So those two are.
Yeah, you get them all mixed up. The islands. This is a good thing too. We'll understand the islands a little bit more because we'll see them play more often. But when I remember that Saint Vincent and the Grenadines match in Montreal, this is going back to three cycles ago. I remember heading into that game, they were ranked like above us in the rankings. And everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to die in this. And no, it wasn't really that challenging once they got down there. And I think that's a great thing that this will shake out, that finally the, the old easy joke about Canada is so bad at soccer, they rank between this and that, we'll sort of get sorted out and we'll find our natural ranking, which is probably in the 50s or 60s, yeah. Somewhere in the world ranking.
I was going to say 60-something. I was going to say like 64, 65. We're trying now, we're 76, I think? I think we're 76 or... around that number in the latest FIFA rankings. France is number one.
This is a good thing because ultimately the reason it's a good thing, though, I've got a little off track, is that so long as they get the job done, they will be playing, they'll be drawn into a group against one of Mexico, Costa Rica, and the United States, one of Jamaica, TNT, and Honduras, and some other team at Canada's level, basically. So that will be a challenge. They'll be punching up a little bit in those games. And more importantly, they'll get likely – a, you know, a matchup or two in the Caribbean, in the Central America, and especially Central America is where we want to go. And I mean, I know it's going to be make everyone crazy when the draw happens, but I kind of want to draw Honduras in this thing.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, maybe it's time we go back to San Pedro Sula with a different type of lineup and we put eight past the keeper. Maybe it's that generation's goal. It's that generation's maybe their intention to finally make us forget that god-awful day of, what, 6 years ago now?
It's a while ago now. Yeah, it's a day in infamy. And it got mentioned in John's article, right? It said it hangs over the program. It still does, although this generation wasn't involved. Half of them probably weren't even watching. So, you
half of them were like just starting their serious playing of soccer, right? When you're 13, 14, like Alfonso Davies was 10. He was just playing football in Edmonton, soccer. And then they're like, he probably doesn't remember that, but we do.
Yeah, and that's the issue for sure. So yeah, it's time to move on that. And I think the only way to do that is to play games down there, and it will set us up for qualifying. So in the past that we've gone, you know, four cycles. So the, you know, entirely new players. We're experiencing Central American heat, the travel, the you know, fireworks outside the hotel at, I don't know if we'll get that in the Nations League, but all the challenges of playing down there for the first time World Cup qualifying. Now at least they will have exposure to it in games that are, they're not, you know, World Cup qualifiers, but they're not friendlies either. There's something in the middle, and I think that's a benefit to everyone. The benefits to the Caribbean, to the small nations are obvious. They never played, and now they will.
And, you know, you mentioned the getting used to the atmosphere, getting used to the hostility of playing in the Caribbean. But the heat is not really a factor anymore because, well, it was hotter in Canada this summer than maybe anywhere else on the damn planet. And we've seen teams play in 38, 39, 40 degrees Celsius. So I guess the heat is maybe not an enemy anymore. It's just part of the course.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always found it kind of funny that people think that you're playing in Fort McMurray or something would be a benefit to our players because they don't really play in that climate in the club careers normally. So it's more about the travel stuff and the fan stuff and all that sort. And like, there's little things down there that, especially if these guys are playing in Europe or MLS, they're not used to going into an environment where they're literally officials are working against them to make things hard on them, right? Like, that's just not something they're used to. And to get used to that in a situation that is somewhat competitive is beneficial. And it has all those other auxiliary benefits in terms of boosting the rankings and providing home dates. Let's not underestimate that. And particularly with the CPL, which maybe we'll segue into a little bit of CPL talk to end the show. Particularly with CPL and trying to develop those markets, it will give a chance if you're playing a smaller country, even a bigger nation, to go into Halifax, to go into Calgary, to go into these places, these stadiums that will exist now, and say, okay, let's play these games here so that we can build these markets moving forward and develop new Canadian fans and soccer fans in general, which will maybe then go buy tickets to the club team as well. So I think there's a lot of benefits to be had here.
Speaking of the Canadian Premier League, we had a Two Solitude Soccer podcast for patrons only yesterday. Dwayne and I talked about Ottawa's decision to remain in the USL for the 2019 season. We talked about the few events leading up to that decision, the ramification of that decision for Ottawa, for the league, for the market, for the owners, for the players. So for $2 a month, I suggest you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Do like about 10 new people yesterday. Thank you for the 77 now, or 67 patrons, and thank you very much for your donations and your help. $2 a month will give you access to it. If you give us more, we really appreciate it. You help contributing to the growth of this network, of this show, of our time, of the coverage. And there's no place like Patreon and our Patreon to be able to be truly open with you listeners. Behind that paywall, we don't have any shackles. So go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. But Dwayne, just quickly, what else have you learned since yesterday?
Yeah, I put an article out on Canadian Soccer News two days in a row yesterday to talk a little bit more about what I learned. I think that when we recorded Two Salties yesterday, it was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and my opinion in terms of Ottawa's potential to get back on to the table shifted in the 6 or 7 hours from the time that we recorded that until I wrote the article. And I would now put the chance of Ottawa being in the Canadian Premier League in 2019 at somewhere around 0.1%. It is highly, highly unlikely based on what I've been told in terms of both the sort of how teams are getting, how the parties are getting along, how far the gap is. There's personality clashes that are there. I'm not going to go any further than that right now, not just to force you to go to Two Solitudes, but also just because I'm waiting on a few things to come through. Now, one thing I am said, and I did tweet this out yesterday that I will put out on this show right now, is that I did speak to a couple people late yesterday afternoon talking about this idea of seven teams, launching with seven teams, and I'm going to have some news on the seven and some stuff a little bit later today. I'm waiting till noon to get the chance for comment from the Canadian Premier League itself. So if noon rolls around and I haven't heard back, then I'll put out this information that I'm hinting at right now. But the information I will put out right now is that there is a group that is in the late stages of development. They were initially preparing to be a team that the first expansion team essentially in for a 2019 launch or 2020 launch, I should say. They now feel there are parties at the Canadian Premier League that feel that it is worth investigating whether they can fast track them in. And I have not been 100% confirmed which city it is, but I've been told that the city is in Ontario. And if you think about that, there's only a couple options that it could be. So you can draw your conclusions from there. If I can get an exact, you know, someone to confirm to me on or off record which of the two cities it is, I will say it out loud. But that's where they're looking at right now.
The question is there the Who song that talks about that city?
Well,
guess who? The Who? Guess who? No, the Who. Yeah, the Who. I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a couple options here, and one of them is a little further ahead. So I'm working on getting that solid. But you know, a lot of people were thinking Regina, a lot of people were thinking somewhere out west. Hopefully. When I was saying this yesterday, but I can tell you that it's an Ontario market that they're looking at, and I'll try and narrow it down further for you today.
One day there'll be a team in Quebec too, so let's not forget that. And there might be a few pockets that are waking up maybe a bit late to the party. But 2020 will come fast enough. All right, you like what we do? You like the Canadian soccer talk? You like the Canadian soccer business aspect as well? Canadian Soccer Business is the Canadian Premier League business partner. Well, we talk about them often. Patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, the exclusive show for patrons only. And you can pledge, donate, and get access to this exclusive show. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back next week with Nations League Review, with MLS Review. There's three games this weekend. New England won against NYCFC, just to make sure that the playoff race is a bit more complicated, and we'll talk about this more next week. And until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.